In this episode of the On.NET Show, we'll have Philip Carter coming back on to talk to us about some of the new tooling enhancements for F-sharp developers inside of Visual Studio 2017 15.8. Welcome to another episode of the On.NET Show. My name is Cecil Phillip, and with me I have Philip back on the show. How's it going, man?
Hey, pretty good. Yourself?
Pretty good. So what are you here to talk to us about today?
So I'm here to talk about F-sharp tooling in Visual Studio, specifically VS 2017.
VS 17. So yeah. We're talking about Visual Studio VS...
2017.
I'm sorry, Visual Studio 2017, 15.8, right?
Yeah, 15.8. It should be 15.9 fairly in the soon future. But we just have some bug fixes going in that one because that's kind of like a nice stability release, that sort of stuff. But one of the things I wanted to do is like we shipped some new cool stuff in 15.8. Mm-hmm. But there's been a whole lot of F-sharp tools that have shipped in Visual Studio all the way in the Visual Studio 2017 lifetime. So I think it'd probably be a good idea to just kind of go through like all the stuff because there's a huge difference between this one and Visual Studio 2015, especially in what's installed in the box by default.
Okay, pretty good. So why don't we start off with just showing people how we could even get these updates installed and you know, how can I get that F-sharp tooling support?
Absolutely. First, it's probably a good idea to go to the Visual Studio website, and there's a really nice big download button there. So you can click that, and then you will download the Visual Studio installer.
Okay.
And the VS installer, once you select stuff, it will pop up something that looks like this, where you got these workloads. Right. So there's a whole bunch of stuff. Try not to get too caught up in what every single one means here. The two important ones are .NET Desktop Development and ASP.NET and Web Development. Okay. This will give you a whole bunch of tools, including everything that you need for F-sharp. So the .NET Desktop Development, there is also an additional thing you may want to select if you have older F-sharp style projects that are not targeting .NET Core. There is a thing here called an individual component, as it's called F-sharp desktop language support. All this does is bring along file new project templates that create older style projects, like the really big ones, but like there's a lot of people who still use those, and so you can select that, that'll bring that on.
So what I want to do is I want to make sure that I select that desktop development option, and then on the right side I could see, like underneath the optional section is what we're looking at, right?
Yeah.
We could select those.
Yeah, and so between this and the ASP.NET and web workload, you will also get .NET Core installed in your machine, sort of the latest good one that came with Visual Studio there. Mm-hmm. And that will also install some additional templates for creating .NET Core style projects, .NET standard projects, unit test projects that use .NET Core, and ASP.NET Core style projects for building web APIs and things like that.
Gotcha.
So once you have that all installed, once you go to File New Project, you should be able to see quite a few options under F-sharp there. So like I've got under .NET Core thing, like, you know, I've got, you know, a few options there. I can create some unit test projects if I like. I can create a web app if I like. I'm actually not going to do that because that would break my current solution, but that would close it, not break it. Sorry, but once you're there, then you're sort of set. You can do pretty much anything you like with F Sharp inside of Visual Studio.
Okay, cool. Sounds pretty good. So let's take a look at some of this tooling that we got now.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I did is I went ahead and I cloned the fsharp.formatting project, which is a big community project out there that lets you do a whole bunch of different stuff. It's sort of if you have a library and you want to have really descriptive comments that sort of explain like how you should use this library, you can put that in source code and you can actually embed Markdown inside of like comments and stuff. And what this thing will do is this will go and actually parse that as Markdown, and then it'll actually emit Markdown files, HTML files, all sorts of different stuff. It supports a wide variety of formatting. And so when you actually use it, you can produce a website that looks kind of like this. And what's kind of neat is it's got some cool code samples, and if you hover over, you actually get a tooltip inside the browser, which is pretty neat.
That's pretty impressive.
So this is a really, really cool project. I recommend that people try it out if they're interested in this sort of thing. And so I have the full solution open. You notice on the, I moved this over onto the left-hand side because I usually prefer it that way. These are all new style projects. So we have full support for these. So, you know, you can edit it and see what's in there. So this is, you know, the much nicer project file format. The main difference between this and C# is that with F# you specify the files explicitly rather than use file globbing, because file ordering is
important.
Yeah, it's important for the compiler. So.
Got it.
But yeah, you got all these. And so we're inside the Markdown parser here. It's kind of this big file. Let me scroll all the way to the top. Whole lot going on here. But I think I'm just going to go just through the list here as sure, as we go through this.
Yeah, let's do it.
Through this file here. So in VS 2015, there was sort of minimal colorization. Like you got like keywords and stuff, but then everything else was just kind of like black text,
sure,
which is fine. You know, some people actually prefer that, and you can actually set that setting to be that way. But a lot of people, especially those who had been doing C# style programming, have gotten used to semantic colorization, right? So like, you know, types being able to be colorized as like teal, for example, or you
sure
could you could set it to be pink, you could set it to be anything like that, but differentiate by default. And so we're doing that as well. You'll notice that that's also in the tooltips. So we have like, you know, icon in there that sort of represents like, I guess that's what module looks like for the icon. But we sort of bring that colorization into the tooltips as well, which is new because in VS 2015, these would all just be white text,
right.
Which, it can be a little hard to read a really, really big thing of white text, and so that's why we do that. So yeah, we got those colorized tooltips, but then speaking of more colors, there's some other fun stuff that you can do. So let me just pick a random function in here, somewhere in here. There's a whole lot to cover. Okay, I'll just go inside here, and I'm going to do something that is non-standard F#. I'll create a mutable value.
Okay.
Okay. So we'll get let mutable non-standard value is 12. Okay. So you notice this got colorized a little bit differently. It's sort of this yellow orangish color. It's actually a bit more prominent in the dark theme. But it'll show up in your different theming. So in this case, I'm just creating a mutable value and I'm setting it. And that's not terrible F#, but F# is immutable by default.
Right.
And so it's oftentimes really helpful to sort of see, like at a glance, what things are mutable versus what things are not mutable based off of colorization.
Sure.
As you go through and actually inspect each individual value, you can certainly find that out yourself. But it's really nice as you're just kind of scanning code to sort of see that.
Right, so I'm looking at the code right now. So we're looking at line 332.
Yeah.
Right, so that has a different color. But if we look at 334, that one is a non-mutable value, and that has a different color, right? So that's how we can help differentiate between the two.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. So no hash is immutable, and that's why it's not colored. If I were to mutate this, if I were to say that it's mutable, then it immediately changes color.
Sure.
Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that it is being changed, but it means that it's possible of being changed.
Sure.
Possible to be changed. Something that you may have also noticed, kind of this left-hand side here, is there's all these like these dotted lines going on, these vertical dotted lines. These are known as structured guidelines. Mm-hmm. This is a new feature that shipped in VS 2017, and it's all based off of, you know, the actual structure of the code. So like, you know, these I can use outlining in this case and sort of collapse things, and I can collapse things. You know, like this scope is inside of this scope that we see here. So this function, I can collapse the whole thing. Or I could just choose to collapse this thing altogether. Or if I'm the kind of person who doesn't like any of this stuff, I can actually just go to settings and turn it all off. And then I won't get any ability to, you know, code fold or things like that. But it's all configurable, which is pretty cool.
Sure. And is this also too because F# has like white space significant?
Yeah. So this can actually be pretty helpful because F# is white space significant. And so, as you said. So it's one of those things where you can usually sort of notice if you look at something really hard, but if you're just kind of doing a quick glance at something, seeing this vertical line sort of go all the way and then seeing something else and that's to the right of that vertical line, that can very easily sort of help you like, oh yeah, this is in a different scope.
Right.
Yeah. So then we also have, speaking of colorization, we also have format string colorization. So say I wanted to print out this value for some reason. Value is, there we go. I'll go non-standard value. So you'll notice that the actual color of this format specifier inside of the string is different.
Right.
That's a way for you to very quickly differentiate, like, you know, where in the format string something is going to be.
Right.
So that's pretty neat.
Nice.
Yeah. And then so we have a few other things that are kind of cool, which you probably already noticed. Like if I click on this header symbol, you'll notice that it kind of highlights the other things inside of there. That's known as semantic highlighting. It's, again, one of those things that's not really like this super big deal. But as you sort of click things, you can see kind of at a glance where it's being used, go there. It's one of those things that over the course of like a long day where you're just looking at all sorts of little code, it really helps to just click something, sort of see where it's being used, go from there, and not really have to think too hard about where the thing is actually being used.
Sure. I'm kind of wondering too, like, so as I select that particular that particular variable. Mm-hmm. Do I have the ability to, like, for instance, if I just start editing it, will it just start renaming all of the other ones? Like, if I wanted to refactor?
If I could refactor. So if you want to refactor, you can actually go ahead and try to rename it. And so in this case, this is inline rename. So you notice all these things are green.
Got it.
And so I can call it Cecil's header.
Sure.
And okay. It'll show up there. And then I can apply those changes. And this works across a solution. So it's not just limited to a single file.
Oh, no.
Right. And similarly, if I wanted to find references, I could just do Shift F12 here. And then it'll bring it up in this really collapsed window that I have here. But then you can see this is a new find references window that you know C# and VB use, and you can sort of explore things like that as well.
Nice,
which is pretty cool. Another one that we have is brace completion, which is again one of those things that's not a particularly incredible thing, but it's still kind of nice. If I wanted to find like a little inline function there, I could say that that's equal to, or no, I won't do that. I can never think of like what to show off with brace completion when I'm actually on the spot. You know what? I think I know what I'll do.
Okay.
I'll create a new script file here. So I just did Control N, and this script file is just kind of sitting somewhere. So I'll create a new empty class that doesn't do anything important. But you'll notice that as I typed out these, that was actually not one of the contexts where it's in, but this is a context where it actually shows up.
Right.
So this is how you do attributes in F#. They're actually two characters. So if I want to do this, that's not an actual attribute. I'd go like that, that'll actually work.
Got it.
And I can say that that's auto open, which this would actually be an invalid application of that attribute, but I can go from there.
Sure.
So there's some pretty fun stuff like that. Just nice little quality of life improvement that you would not be able to have in VS 2015, but you get it now.
Right. Yeah. I think what's really cool about a lot of these features is, as you're writing significant amounts of code, mm-hmm. like those little quick fixes and those little shortcuts really help improve and save you a lot of time over the course of your development space.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so you can do all sorts of fun stuff. So say I'll define a new F# type here. We'll call this person. And a person can either be a Philip with a name or a Cecil with a name.
Right.
So we're the only two types of people that can exist,
nice.
I think, here. Or did I? There we go. Can never type and think and talk at the same time.
Happens to all of us.
Right. Okay, so I have a new type. You can see right here, it's Philip of string, Cecil of string. This is a pretty straightforward discriminated union. Mm-hmm. So I'll create an instance of one of those. I'll go, Philip is Philip, and I'll give myself the name Philip. This is nice redundant code here. And we'll do that with Cecil here. But instead, I will let's just do that because it's pretty common for me to mistype something like that. Sure. Immediately you get a compile error, which is kind of cool. But a little light bulb popped up. If I go there, it says replace with Cecil the actual version of it.
Oh, okay.
So if you mistype something and it's kind of close. We'll actually detect that, and we'll suggest something to you based off of what the compiler already knows. Because if I undo this, sort of up until this point, the compiler's already figured out that person, there's a Cecil class in here, and this looks like it's pretty close to that, so that's why it suggests it right there.
Right. And you said that's not just based on the file, it's based on whatever's in the project or in the solution.
Yeah, this is based on whatever the compiler knows up until this point.
Got it.
Yeah. And then another thing that you may have noticed is that Cecil right here was sort of grayed out. It's not quite as strong of a color as Philip because logically I'm not actually using it. I'm using this thing called CECCIL.
Right, there's a different version of it.
Yeah, and then I'll go ahead and replace it, and then the color pops in for this because it's actually being used.
Got it.
Right. So say I wanted to do this. Well, I'll have a list of let's say that goes to 5, and then I'll have a function. Let's just call it squares, and that's we'll have an inline list here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and we'll pipe that into list.map fun x such that x times x. Cool. So you may have been thinking, well, you just created a list up here. Why did you just do something in line there? Well, that's to show off, like, all of these are sort of grayed out right now because they're not actually being used by something. So in this case, list is not being used by something. So the compiler knows this, and I get a light bulb suggestion saying, like, hey, it's not being used. Do you want to give it an underscore as a name as sort of like a discard? Because sometimes it is valid in F-sharp code to sort of do something that produces a value, but you don't really care what the value is. Sure. Or you're not using it at this point in time. And so you can just, I can just call it underscore. And then I won't get the light bulb to pop up anymore. It won't trigger an unused value warning if I compile with unused value as one of those things that, so that it's a setting that you can set in the compiler to make sure that you always use all your values that you define.
Right.
So that's kind of neat too. Another fun one. So let's define an interface. Let's call it iNameable. And we'll give it an abstract getName. And okay, so this interface, you can just call getName. It'll produce a string. The string is probably a name for that. So in F-sharp, you can create sort of these ad hoc interface implementations. Like, you don't need to do the ceremony of a whole class, implement this interface, create an instance of the class, blah, blah, blah. Like, you can just do this. It's really helpful for unit testing. So I'll create a nameable instance, and then I'm going to use this syntax for object expressions, and I'll go new iNameable with, and all of a sudden I get another light bulb popping up right here. Okay. And it says implement interface. So I can actually choose to have this implemented in line here. This throws a new, not implemented exception at this point in time, but,
That's just like a placeholder.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll have it do Philip there, which is kind of nice because, I'm Philip.
Sure.
And there we go. So now I was able to sort of do a little bit of code gen there. And so then we can just send this off to F-sharp Interactive. And we'll just pop this up there. Okay, we'll go. Okay, so that's been sent there. I'm just going to actually invoke the name because I forgot to do that. Okay, we'll
go. Could you do that in F-sharp Interactive though? Could you just invoke it at the bottom?
Yeah, we could, but there's no IntelliSense in F-sharp Interactive, so
Got
I prefer
it.
To do it
sure.
Here.
That makes sense.
Cool. So we'll send that over, and there we go. So this is actually, the screen's all blown up for the sake of the video, but normally screens are not quite like this.
Sure.
One of the things that people will do with interactive programming, especially when they want to learn an API, is they will write some code in here, get the full fidelity of the editor, and then you can hit Alt-Enter, and that will just go ahead and execute whatever you're doing in F-sharp Interactive, and you can see the results kind of as an output pane. Now, indeed, I could do this. I could go nameable.getName. But it's a little nicer to do in the editor.
Gotcha.
Another cool thing that you can have when you're scripting with F-sharp is scripting is sort of like this ad hoc, sort of like, this is just an F-sharp script. What it actually does is when you send it to F-sharp Interactive, it basically produces a script file in there that's sort of logically what's going on.
Right.
But this script isn't like the same as like a file that's existing inside of a project. Like it can be, it's a bit more free, I guess.
Sure.
So
the syntax is a little bit looser.
Yeah, well, no, the syntax is still sort of the same, but like what you reference and like sort of the context it exists in is a lot more free
Got
there.
It.
So
okay.
What you can do is you can actually load additional files, such as additional script files. So notice that I just typed string there. And all of a sudden, I have access to stuff that's on my machine. I can actually crawl
the file system.
I can crawl the file system with IntelliSense. So, like, I don't think I have any. I don't think I have any other script files, at least right here. I could maybe find some if I was potentially curious. But what that will do is, once it's loaded, it effectively says, "Okay, when F-sharp Interactive." Executes this script, it will go and look at the load directive and then say, oh, there's another script in there. Let's go ahead and execute that as well so that you can, so if you define some types in one script, you can actually use those types inside of this.
Got it.
So it's sort of like a whole mode of programming that, you can do inside of Visual Studio. You don't need VS for, obviously, but like you can do it there. And so it's really, really nice for just API exploration and like kind of scripting out sort of like how you would use a part of a system that you're working in before you do it for real.
And so would you say that's the main use case for this? It's mainly for prototyping, kind of just trying things out before?
That's definitely one of the main use cases. I would say another use case, especially one that's growing right now, is machine learning. Okay. Because with machine learning, you totally want to be in that scripting environment. You want to just execute some code, see what it looks like, go back, change things a little bit. Like, right. You're not building a running application.
Sure.
And so that interactivity model is really important for that. And so this is something that we're actually going to be investing in more moving forward, because machine learning is becoming more and more important, and F-sharp is something that, like, there's actually quite a few machine learning specialists in F-sharp that have been wanting, you know, more advanced tools in this sort of space. So
that makes sense.
Yeah, there should be some really cool stuff coming down the line there. But a few other things that are kind of cool. You may have noticed, let's see if I got this right here. So you may have noticed that if I hover over something, you know, yeah, I get the colors, but there's some stuff that's kind of underlined. That's kind of weird. You normally don't see that if you're in C#. Well, that's because you can actually click on it and it will go to definition.
So
F# tooltips are sometimes a bit more they can be a bit more rich with information than C# style tooltips, including the ability to navigate, which is kind of cool. So I can go there. And, you know, there's this markdown paragraph type. Whoa, that's a big one, because I blew up the font here.
Sure.
But
any of those things with underlines, I could click on them and go to.
Exactly. I can go to this thing called markdown span, see what that looks like. Similarly, you know, you can F12 go to definition like that. Another one that you can do is you can do control click go to definition. So, you know, it now turned into a hyperlink, and I can click on that and that'll do the same thing. And you can also, just to round out all the different ways you can go to definition, is do peek at definition. So whichever one you prefer, using the tooltips, invoking F12, invoking Alt F12, or control clicking, you can basically do it all, which is pretty sweet.
Nice.
Yeah. And then, as you probably noticed, either in this video or certainly other videos, is there's just auto completion as you're typing, right? So I type name and I get nameable kind of right off the bat there.
Right.
Nothing too fancy to talk about there, just you get completion as you type. There's actually an option to turn it on here. There's a few more options that are kind of interesting. So if we go to IntelliSense, I have this turned off here, but this is show symbols and unopened namespaces. So if I turn this on, I'll go let d equals date. And all of a sudden I got all these things that are from other namespaces that I haven't actually opened yet. So I have date time, right? I have not opened the system namespace. So when I hit that, up at the top, this actually stuck the system namespace up there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's a pretty neat feature. Now, I have it turned it off because I usually prefer to not have too much of that stuff in my completion list, but this is something that, like, if you're the kind of person who likes that sort of stuff, you can absolutely configure it that way. So you'll notice now I deleted the system namespace declaration, and that's gone. Well, I get another light bulb, and it says, hey, would you like to open system? Would you like to make it be system.datetime? You can have that option there. So I'm going to have it be system.datetime. And then I'll go inside here, and I will go under code fixes, simplify names. So if I go simplify name analysis, we actually have this one turned off because it can be rather expensive. I think it's trying to go through the whole project right now. So this is something that some people like to have on, but what it would normally do is allow you to remove the qualification.
Okay.
So that's off by default. I usually do keep it off because it can be rather expensive. But if you want to do that, you can run that.
What was that one called again?
Simplify Names.
Simplify Names, and that was inside of Code Fixes.
Yeah, inside of Code Fixes. We have a few of these that are turned on by default. If you don't like the light bulbs coming at you for any reason or another, you can always just go ahead and turn them all off.
Got it.
Which is kind of sweet. And then we have another one. This is more of an experimental feature, so it's pretty sweet. Let's see, we'll use colors and annotations. Okay, so let me create a new script file here. And I will copy and paste all of this over into here. And we should get some stuff. Font's a little big.
Okay.
I forgot to turn the font down.
That's fine. So what is this? What is this doing?
Actually, here, I really need to adjust the font here because this looks ridiculous.
Sure, no worries.
Code lens. Okay, let's make that.
So you have it at 150%. Is that what you want to turn down?
Oh yeah, that could be it. Maybe. I don't know. I'll it's a specific setting.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
So I'd have to change that somewhere. But what's important here is, so you see these little things that look like comments up at the top here. Well, this is actually sort of like a fake comment. But this is actually using some type inference in this case, right? So I can go let f x's equal to x's list.sum. And list.sum, right. Let's go list.sum by x such that x is greater than 3. Is that it? Yeah. No, what's that? Does not support or do.
Says bool does not support.
I always forget how to use these things. Well, I'm talking, so. You know, I'm just going to do a quick other thing here. List.filter x such that x. Okay, cool. So that produces the odds in this case.
Okay.
So I had a brain fart there. But so I've just done this one so many times that it's like I don't even think as I type it. But so you'll notice that something popped up here where it says int list and then arrow int list. This is actually, if you hover over f, it shows the same thing. But this is something that exists in Visual Studio Code. It's at a higher fidelity in Visual Studio Code, which is why this is off by default right now. It's behind a little thing that says experimental.
Yeah.
But this is really helpful for especially newcomers if they're typing code and they want to see like what the types of things actually are.
Sure.
So this is something that we're hoping to flesh out over time and then eventually turn on by default. Maybe we'll sort of see. It's something we're going to experiment with, get some feedback on, sort of do that sort of thing. But this, again, is also something that may be very helpful for data science workloads because you may have a lot of people who are new to F-sharp and functional programming but want to reap the benefits of FP, strong types, that sort of stuff. So little tools like this can sort of help that out.
So in terms of giving feedback, right, because you just mentioned, you know, you want people to try out some of these experimental features, where's the best place for us to go to give you feedback on some of these tools and, you know, some of the things that are happening, particularly with the F-sharp tools?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So there's two primary ways to submit feedback and bugs, honestly, as well. If you run into something that you think is a bug, it's a good idea to always submit it. Within Visual Studio, there's the send feedback tool with report a problem, and this thing will pop up and loads a whole bunch of different stuff, but you can optionally collect all sorts of diagnostic information if you want to send it. If you search for something, it sort of brings up existing issues to sort of see if the thing that you're reporting is also like that. Looks like I'm not signed in, so I needed to do that.
Sure, that's fine.
Typical for me.
But essentially, it's all right in the editor, right?
Yeah,
so I don't have to go anywhere else.
That's one option. And then the other option is if you go to Microsoft Visual F Sharp. So we have a repository here. This is where all the stuff is open source. And so you just go to the issues link, go ahead and create a new issue. You can give feedback. You can report a bug. You can, you know, maybe suggest that something should be done. So like, you know, if you want to look at here and you go, you know, feature request, something like that. You know, there's all sorts of feature requests that can come here. And so, you know, you could look at one of those, maybe say, oh, I'd be interested in implementing that. And then we'd say,
sure.
Okay, cool. So that's sort of how feedback can go. So if we turn something on by default and you say, oh, man, I really don't like that, then you can come on here and sort of explain to us why, and we can have a discussion about it and sort of maybe see if there's a way to make the options, you know, more discoverable. Maybe if there's a way, you know, maybe we decide, okay, yeah, you know, we should actually turn this one off by default. That's, we like to have the sorts of conversations with people.
Sure, that sounds pretty good. So our call to action is make sure you go and select the .NET desktop workload, right? Make sure we hit that checkbox and we get the Visual F-sharp tools.
And then the ASP.NET workload as well.
And inside of the ASP.NET workload as well, and then also to make sure that we send some feedback back, whether it's through GitHub or through that send feedback inside of Visual Studio.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
And this has been another episode of the On.NET Show, and we had Philip talking to us about some of the new tooling inside of Visual Studio for F-Sharp.